Hello, this is Daniel Jalkut.
And this is Manton Reese.
And this is Core Intuition. Manton Reese misses you. This week's show is sponsored by Linode and Udacity. Well, Manton, you know I'm kind of a Wild West kind of when it comes to installing beta OSs. I'm running iOS 12? No, 13. What's the one that's coming?
I think 13.
13. I can't keep track. There was this joke in the talk show live. Did you hear it?
It's 12. It's 12. It's coming up.
Okay. This is perfect because there was this joke in the talk show live where John Gruber was saying like he has trouble keeping track of all the numbers. And he says, why doesn't iOS have names like, you know, Yosemite and High Sierra and Mojave? Mm-hmm. He says, it's so hard to keep track of the numbers. And I don't remember if it was which guest, if it was Jaws or, I'm sorry, I'm blanking on the other guy's name, but he was just like, well, 12 comes after 11. That's how it works.
That's fine if you remember the last
number. Right, but I'm totally with John on this. Like, I get totally confused. Anyway, I'm running the betas. You know, I usually install the macOS beta pretty soon, you know, pretty soon after WWDC. I installed it earlier than usual this year because, not only because I heard it was pretty stable, which has panned out for me, it does seem pretty stable, but also because dark mode is coming to macOS. This is a huge thing.
Yep.
I love this, not because I plan to use dark mode. I love dark mode for a few reasons. I love it because it's something that we get that iOS doesn't get. Sorry, iOS.
That's a first, right?
I love that. I mean, you know, we got auto layout before iOS did. People like to talk about, like, oh, old and busted Mac, ha ha ha, AppKit must be nice, like clanging those flints together trying to start a fire. You know, sometimes we get the new fancy stuff, and dark mode is an example of that. I installed it because I realized I was running it in a VM for a while, and I realized I didn't completely trust like the rendering in VMware, and not to say there's anything wrong with VMware, but I'm like looking at this window in a window and I'm like, I don't know, is this really exactly what it looks like? Also, the way I usually find like the most subtle of bugs in my apps is not, you know, not like this like quick run through. It's more like using them over a course of weeks and months and noticing things as they come up. So I realized dark mode is a big enough deal. Like, I kind of have to, if I want to support dark mode, I kind of have to install the beta now and start running with it. And part of that is just getting a feel for what dark mode is supposed to feel like. So I'm looking at you. I'm not looking at you, Manton. I'm looking at my Mac right now while talking to you. And I'm looking at, you know, Safari running dark mode. I'm running dark mode in my whole system. I don't intend to use this. I don't know. Who knows? Maybe I'll switch my mind after testing it so much. But I'm running it this way so I can get a feel for what Apple thinks dark mode should look like, and so I can start playing around with enabling dark mode in my apps and starting to, you know, fix them basically to work with dark mode. We talked about in the past. I have a sort of attitude about development, which is, and I blogged about this a long time ago. I'll link to it, but it's. I think the name of my blog post was Target the Forward Fringe. And the idea is if you can make the users who are passionately installing Apple's latest stuff and, you know, gobbling it up, saying, I want dark mode now, you know, or I want whatever, I want to use app extensions, I want Retina. If you can target those users and make them happy, I think those users are a lot more, in a way, more valuable than other users as far as the whole like word of mouth thing goes, because those types of users are going to be the users who are like, haha, this is awesome. I installed Mars Edit on Mojave and it already supports dark mode. Anyway, that's the theory. So I want to get dark mode support in as soon as I can. It's been fascinating to run with it and start to really get a feel for how many nuanced issues there are. And anybody who's listened to some other podcasts, I was just listening to the Accidental Tech podcast from, I think, last week, and they talked about how, I think John Siracusa was saying, how great the sessions at WWDC were for dark mode. And I agree with him. They were great because they were a great combination of technical and design. And mm-hmm. they sort of get at, you know, little things that kind of blew my mind included like examples where you think like, oh, this is easy. All I need to do to support dark mode is to have images that are like templates, which means that they are, you know, treated as a mask and Apple can draw them in whatever color they want.
Yeah.
And that's a great starting point. But in those dark mode sessions, I think this was particularly in the intro to dark mode, they talk about how inverting a template sometimes doesn't create the right effect in dark mode. So you have to like change the template. And these little things, I think this has been a common trend among our developer friends, Manson, and I'm sure it's a common trend throughout the greater developer community. This kind of like fiddling with like little details to make something work perfectly is kind of fun. And and it's fun, even though I don't particularly intend to run dark mode. But here I'll finally get to the thing that the other thing I really like about dark mode is it gives customers something else, something new to love about the Mac that we can be a part of as, in my case, as a Mac developer.
Yeah, I love that this is, like you said, it's Mac first. It's really their headline feature for Mojave. Like if you go to the Apple website, it's like this is the big thing. And they have, you know, number of new features, changes to the Finder, quick look, screenshots, all this kind of stuff. But like dark mode is the big thing because it's visual. People notice it. Just like when iOS 7 shipped, it's like, wow, this is different. Looks different. Anything visual, anything with buttons and colors, like that's the big feature because that's what people see. This is kind of a newbie question because I've like started watching one of the sessions and I haven't really caught up. If you run Mars Edit today, the, you know, previous release on the beta, you get dark mode or do you have to opt in by building against the Mojave SDK?
Good question. They make it sound like in the WWDC, if you're not astute, you won't notice that there's they make it sound like you have to link against the 10.14 SDK. And what they mean is if you link against the 10.14 SDK, you will get opted in to dark mode if you don't do anything else. Mm-hmm. Now, there is a info.plist key called, I think it's called NS requires Aqua appearance. And this is key because if you want to keep building with an older SDK, but you manage to sort of finesse your code so that your app looks great in dark mode, you can still build against like the 10.13, 10.12, even like 10.10 SDK. If you set this to to requires Aqua appearance, no.
Interesting. So either way, it is an opt-in.
It's an opt-in unless you link against the 10.14 SDK. So some people, it's worth noting that some people will have reasons to link against the 10.14 SDK, and yet they are not prepared to opt into dark mode. Mm-hmm. And so the flip side of that coin is you can use that same info.plist key to set requires Aqua appearance to yes. Mm-hmm. And then even if you link against the 10.14 SDK, you will not get dark mode, even when the user has dark mode on.
Yeah, so that's interesting. So when Mojave ships, there will be a mix of apps, most likely. That's the thing I wasn't clear about. Like if you had an older app, would it look kind of okay in dark mode or would it look like it used to look?
Yeah, some apps will just look like trash. So that is, I think, I mean...
Well, you mean they will look not dark mode. They won't look like half.
Right? I mean, if they were to just inflict dark mode on every app, then some apps would look so trashy that I think that's why they took this pragmatic approach, because they need to give developers a chance to opt in. And in the WWDC session, they stressed that, for instance, linking against 10.14 and saying, I do require Aqua, is something that you should consider a temporary workaround. Like, kind of hinted that at some point, linking against a certain SDK in the future is going to get you dark mode, whether you like it or not.
Yeah.
And
it's possible that a lot of apps are going to look pretty good when they opt in, they build a new version of their app. Like, a lot of things will just work. And like you said, I think icons are one of the biggest things that may be non-trivial to change, especially because many developers got their icons from somebody that's not themselves. Like, they farmed it out to icon designer. And there's certainly places in my apps where to really have a great dark mode experience, I need new icons. Mm-hmm. So I was looking through Mars Edit, and a lot of your icons are already kind of like what you're saying, line art, template based kind of, they will look okay if the line is gray or if it's white on a dark background, but then you have some other icons with a splash of color and those may look great in dark mode and they may not. I guess you probably know because you've probably tested this. Do they look good in dark mode or are you going to need to go back to the designer and say, I need a couple tweaks for dark mode?
Yes. I'm looking at them right now and they do not, it's funny, the ones that are color look better than the ones that are stenciled because they're not designed to be stenciled even though, what do they call it? Template? They're not designed to be a template even though they look like it. And so for example, and it makes sense if you think about like, for example, the one for new post is actually like kind of like a stencil-y template looking thing with a splash of color on it. That one makes sense. Like that's obviously just a bitmap. But similarly, like the little like trash icon for deleting a post is it looks like it can just be converted to a template and it will look great probably. But they don't happen to be templates already. So it's going to take a little bit of work on my part and probably on the part of Brad Ellis, the great designer who made these icons, to help me update it. But the examples they gave in the WWDC talk too were like sometimes when you invert it, different things should be solid and different things should be see-through. So sometimes you just need to have like a completely different version of the icon to make it work. And This is one of the things that makes it kind of fun. It's like, oh, that's interesting. Like that doesn't, in the WWDC talk, they showed like the smiley face icon where it's like, maybe the mouth is negative space in one mode, but the mouth is positive space in the other mode. Maybe the mouth is negative space in both modes. So, and I don't know, it's a poor example maybe, but it's a fascinating talk. I encourage people to go watch it. Even those of our listeners who are not developers, I would encourage you to go watch the intro to dark mode session because it's so interesting for explaining what their thoughts are about how dark mode should work. And I think this has been a response from a lot of developers and users is that this is an example where Apple has put a lot of thought into this. And so even as a person who is not currently planning to use dark mode extensively, I think it will be a huge competitive advantage for Apple in the sense that it will make the platform of the Mac more appealing to people who like dark mode. And it'll be the thought that they've put into it, I think, will make it stand apart from other platforms that try to do this. All right, folks, we're happy to have back sponsoring the show our friends at Linode. If you need a Linux box to host a website, a private Git repository, or maybe to serve as the backend for your iOS app, consider Linode Cloud Hosting. With Linode, you can get a server running in under a minute. They've been doing infrastructure as a service since 2003, and their plans start at the 1 gigabyte level for only $5 a month. Linode's 10 global data centers are equipped with industry-leading data center-grade SSDs, and their plans range from that low $5 a month plan up to higher memory plans starting at 16 gigabytes. All of these come with the full control you expect from a VM, including support for Docker containers, encrypted disks, VPNs, etc. And they offer 24/7 friendly support even on holidays. Use this promo code CoreInt2018 and you also get a $20 credit on your account. That's equivalent to 4 months at the $5 a month plan. So this is a great opportunity to try Linode, see how great it is, see how it meets your needs. And if you need to scale up those servers, you have the opportunity to do so. Go to linode.com/coreint. And thanks so much to Linode for sponsoring the show.
Yeah, of course, I use Linode for all my micro.blog servers. And, I run these servers, they're database servers of different kinds in some cases, web servers, run a bunch of Ruby processes for doing a lot of the you know, the dynamic web app stuff that you'd expect MicroDotBlog to need to be able to do, and the API. And you may be, if you have an iOS app or Mac app, you may need an API that you develop yourself or have someone help you develop. But you also might just want a web server that's just a web server. And one of the nice things about Leno is you can quickly spin up an instance, and they have resources. You just click on resources in the navigation of Leno.com. You can click on the guides. Simple things like setting up Apache, walk you through the steps, installing WordPress if you want to blog and you want to have it on your own server. They have all these guides that really help. If you're worried about getting started and you haven't done a lot of server work, a lot of this stuff walks you right through it. So thanks so much, Leno, for sponsoring the show. It's a great service, and you can learn more and sign up leno.com/Corent.
So Manton, when I rung you up today to talk on our podcast using the excellent but infinitely criticizable Skype, I got this really annoying... I just launched Skype, and I got this really annoying message from Skype. It shows a little weirdly designed, I have to say, kind of like line art picture of two people giving each other a high five and a fist bump at the same time. And it says, Daniel Jalkut, your friend, Manton Reese, misses you. Aww. That's so nice.
Because we only Skype less than a week ago, right?
Because he's only the only person I ever Skype with. And then it says, life is busy. Keeping in touch with friends makes it more fun. Talk to Manton Reese now! Point. And then it has a little button that says, send message. And then it has a little heart with a star on it.
Wow. Yeah.
Do you ever know that you're my hero, Manton? You're everything I aspire to be.
Virtual fist bump through Skype.
Virtual
right now is happening.
Fist bump and high five at the same time with a mysterious circle off to the edge. I don't know what that means, but we're high fiving, we're fist bumping, and we're talking at the same time. And we have different smiley faces, but otherwise we're pretty much the same.
Yeah, these UIs, they try to be so friendly, so helpful, but that's just silly, right? And it's really inappropriate. They don't know a relationship. They don't even, I mean, the Skype UI has no idea who I am. Like, it's kind of presumptuous to like suggest you text me at all, isn't it?
Well, you could be my lawyer for one thing. Like, it could be my, you could be my ex. You could be my deceased friend or relative. You could be any manner of relationship to me where saying that you miss me, first of all, it's unfair to you because I know you like me, Manton, but I don't know that you necessarily miss me even when we haven't talked for a while. And I mean, you know, maybe if it said your friend Manton Reese missed you at WWDC, I'd be like, whoa, how did Skype know that?
I'm actually curious now. I was going to say, was it smart enough to realize that we talk once a week and then we missed a week? But that's not actually true because we did talk last week.
No.
So yeah. I think it's just trying to be helpful when there's no reason to be that helpful. I mean, this is a trend in a lot of UIs where it's like, I mean, Twitter famously, I think, has done some of this, a little bit Facebook inspired, but the kind of like, while you were away, you know, we threw out your algorithmic, you know, I mean, we threw out your reverse chronological timeline, and we have this algorithm to tell you who you should follow and what tweets you missed. And this friend of a friend posted this thing. And I know a lot of our listeners use Twitterific and Tweetbot, and they don't see this kind of stuff. But social networks in particular are kind of notorious at doing this kind of stuff. Like, oh, are you sure you didn't want to say hi to this person? You sure you didn't want to see this tweet?
No, and it's a famous error that I think has been criticized among the social networks pretty well because, like, it's really easy to all those cases I mentioned, like, you know, romantic exes, deceased loved ones, deceased friends, ex friends, you know, clinical relate. Like, you know, what if I had to use Skype once to contact my plumber?
It says
your plumber misses you. Aww. Send a message, heart with a star on it. You know, and it's like, it's just like this whole idea of presuming the emotional state of your user. I wrote about this a long time ago on Red Sweater blog. I'll link back to it because I can't help but, you know, reuse my 10-year-old blog posts. But the idea of imposing an emotional state on your user is one thing. In this case, it's imposing an emotional state on my friend.
Yeah.
You know, on my friend and professional podcasting colleague.
And it's designed to make you feel guilty. That's the worst thing about it.
That's the worst.
It's like your friend Manta misses you, so you should feel guilty that you haven't texted him.
What's wrong with you? You haven't talked to Manton recently. You know, I feel like when you mentioned that it might be some kind of algorithmic thing about the time, it occurred to me that there might be something about me. So I mentioned previously that I have installed Mojave. I wonder if somehow like there's some fluke of running Mojave that has thrown off Skype and like it doesn't know when the last time I talked to you is, you know, there's a lot of these new panels in Mojave. It's interesting, especially in this beta 2, which I'm running now. It has all that stuff now that I think they promised in the keynote that says like it will alert you if like an app even wants to use the microphone or wants to access photos, all that stuff. So it's a little bit of like dialogue overload at first, but it's kind of interesting to see what people are asking for. Mm-hmm. It makes me kind of wonder, like, is there something that Skype was getting access to before that they don't have access to now? And so they're just like, oh, Manton misses you because we can't tell that you've been talking to Manton anymore.
Yeah, more likely it's just, yeah, the team behind Skype, I mean, they've done some great work in some areas. I think they've taken a little bit of a step back in some of the UI lately, and it feels actually a lot like what Marzipan will look like on,
yep.
Mm-hmm. on Mojave. But I think that this is a case of programmers and designers just being too clever. And we see this a lot where, you know, there's one thing to give your app personality. And I think like 90s Apple was really good about great design and personality together. Where like the original Mac and a lot of the software like the 90s felt like there's like just a real had a personality, had like you felt good about using it. But there's that, and then there's like where you cross this line into just being really invasive, really. You're presuming too much about the user, and you're putting too many different connotations onto something that should just be a bland, like basic mm-hmm. experience that appeals to everybody. And yeah, I'm super mindful of this with Microdot Blog, just because so many social networks are getting this, in my opinion, very wrong. You know, their ad base, they've got to keep you engaged. They've got to get their active users up. So they want to keep pulling you back into the app. And then the side effect of that is it's a little bit user hostile in some ways.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's like, I suppose if this hits you at the right time in the right mood, then it feels great. And so it's one of these things that can be a big win. You know, if it is like your best friend from college who you haven't talked to in, I don't know, a year, then I don't know. Even then, to be honest, I don't think it's appropriate, but there are less and more appropriate contexts for this. And the worst case context for it, like, I hope that I never Skyped with my dad who died 8 years ago, because if it comes up and says Michael Jalkut misses you, I'm gonna punch the you know, computer screen. And this is true for a lot of people have emotionally charged relationships with people that our devices know about. And they have to be very careful about how they refer to those relationships. So, I don't know. It's a good example. It's good for me. You know, I think I have a sense for this. Like, even little things like Sparkle, the software update package for Mac, I went through, like, 10 years ago, again, like, I went through and, like, changed all of the strings to not have exclamation points. Mm-hmm. Because by default, it's like, there's a new update for Mars Edit!
Yeah. Yay.
And you're like, you know, yay. And I'm like, you know what? I don't want to presume that the customer is that excited about a bug fix update for my app.
Yep. Yeah, it might have the like opposite effect that you want, especially like they just trying to write their blog post and they're now annoyed, and then they're even more annoyed that the exclamation mark is there. I think some companies, especially now, tend to go a little too far with this. And it's not just the exclamation mark, but it's like emoji everywhere.
Yep.
It's like just a little too friendly. And it's like the release notes that tell a like fictional story instead of just saying that you fixed a certain feature. So we've gone a little far off from the Skype UI example, but it's similar kind of thing. It's just like adding a little something extra, as the kids would say. It's extra. It's it's a little something more than is needed.
Yep, I agree. And it's offensive, really, when it comes down. I mean, it's offensive to me because I can imagine it being really offensive. And it's not acutely offensive for Skype to say that Manton Reese misses me, because, hey, that's okay. Maybe he misses me a little bit. But it's offensive, all the connotations that come with that, all the assumptions about Manton Reese's emotions, all the assumptions about my consideration of Manton Reese's emotions. And, you know, the elephant in the room that, you know, in this case, luckily, Manton Reese is not dead, but somebody else that this alert comes up for very well could be. So yeah. bad job, Skype.
Yep. It's a great thing to keep in mind as we build our software. We have to be mindful of this. This week, we are also happy to have Udacity sponsoring the podcast. Ready to develop iOS apps, but not sure how or where to start? Udacity's on-demand content fits your schedule and is the most flexible and efficient way for you to master the skills you need to become an iOS developer, whether your goals are to publish an indie app or land your dream job. Udacity's iOS Developer Nano Degree program is ideal for students of all levels. By the end of the program, you'll be ready to publish your own app on the App Store, and you'll have a portfolio of apps that you can show to potential employers. Just for our listeners, and for a limited time only, Udacity is offering a 20% discount on their iOS Developer Nano Degree program, and there's 1 week free trial, so you can check out the program risk-free. To sign up, go to udacity.com/iOS and enter the coupon code CORINT, that's all lowercase, on the payment page. Thanks so much to Udacity for sponsoring the podcast.
Manton, we talked about how WWDC just happened. There are so many exciting things. I said earlier that there's just like a ton of things I can't wait to dig into. To be honest, that applies to iOS too. I've been wanting to get into iOS for a long time. I've been mostly doing Mac stuff. I imagine there are a lot of people listening who either are not programmers yet and they're thinking about dipping their toes in, or are programmers but they work on a different platform. Maybe you work on Windows, maybe you work on Mac like I do. You're thinking about getting involved in iOS, or maybe you're already an iOS developer but you recognize that there are a lot of things. There's so many things to know about iOS development, and you recognize that you might have more to learn. Udacity is an amazing site, and I recommend that anybody who feels this way, that you should be getting more involved in iOS development, go check out their program. Like Manton said, there's a 1 week free trial. So just go check it out. Give it a good week. See if it's working for you. And if it is, great. And if it's not, you move on. But I think it's going to work for you because they've put so much time and effort into making these lessons very interactive. You also have access to a community to talk to mentors. You can have code review on the work you do, and you can also chat with other students while you learn. So there's a lot of things about Udacity that make it, you know, a unique method of getting involved with, holding yourself accountable to learning iOS development, and having a community of mentors and other students to support you. So thanks so much to Udacity for sponsoring the show. As Manton said, you can go to udacity.com/iOS, and remember to enter the coupon code CORINT, because that's going to get you a 20% discount. That's an incredible deal. So thanks so much again to Udacity for sponsoring the show.
So Daniel, one Mac that cannot be running the Mojave beta is a Mac that I happen to have, 2008 Mac Pro. I don't know why I still have this computer. Yeah. It's been gathering dust in my house for many years. I have not turned it on in a long time. It was kind of boxed away and forgotten about. My son's computer, he needs an upgrade. And so he's been trying to figure out like what he should get next. And we won't go into that whole thing, but long story short, we thought, hey, let's boot up this old computer and see what it's like. Because I had forgotten. And yeah, plugged it into a new monitor and it boots right up. Mm. It's got, you know, it's old. It's running 10.5. And it's got two hard drives in it. It's got 4 gig of RAM. It's super upgradable. This is the old Mac Pro style, right? Which, like, yeah, you got 4 hard drive bays that can come out easily. You have different expansion slots.
Is this really a cheese grater?
I don't know if it's the
You would know if it's the cheese grater. It's got all the holes in it.
I'm trying to remember if
or it, is it the or is it the or is it the blue Bondi blue?
No. It's the cheese grater style. Okay, I can't remember if they redesigned it, because when I think cheese grater, it's that style, though. It's like the whole side comes down
and you can pull stuff out really easily. That was so great, right? You could just like unclasp this thing and instantly have access. It was like it should have been the envy of every like hardcore PC hacker, you know, customizer.
It's super easy to upgrade. Yeah, like literally 2 seconds, you can have a hard drive out or RAM upgraded. It's really super convenient. And yeah, the reason I hesitate when you said cheese grater is I couldn't remember if they modified it slightly in the newer models, because I thought it looks a little sleeker. And anyway, that doesn't matter. The point is it's a tower, it's a Mac Pro, you can upgrade it. And so this thing boots up and it's really fascinating to look at it. It's slow, like, if you really wanted to use this computer, even like 5 years ago, because I have not used this computer since 10.5, whenever that was.
Yep.
And if you really wanted to use it, you would put in, you put in like some SSD drives, you'd upgrade the RAM. I think it can get to probably 16 or 32. You'd maybe put 4 SSDs in it, upgrade the video card. Like, you could upgrade this thing. But it's fascinating to me looking at this old thing because, for one, it's got all this old stuff on it. So it even has Code Warrior on it, which I had not seen in many, many years. And I'm like, does this thing launch? I like open it and like, here it goes. Code Warrior opens up. And looking at that stuff, it was just a real blast from the past. But it made me think about this, like, how long do computers last and how upgradable are they? And like, what OS could this thing even run? And so we're going to try to upgrade this more just for fun. I don't think it'll go to Sierra quite. I think it goes to El Capitan, maybe Sierra, High Sierra with some hacks, but I'm not totally sure. It's really interesting. And it's again, it's just like a complete contrast from the Macs that are built today. It's like the opposite of the way Apple builds computers.
Yeah, that's fascinating. And, something that came up for me recently, which you might run into using this older Mac with, you know, necessarily limited OS, is I think I mentioned to you offline, or, you know, off the show, that I had a bug in Black Ink where it suddenly stopped being able to connect to the New York Times because the HTTPS, first of all, HTTPS is required by the New York Times. And secondarily, they require a version of TLS, the Transport Layer Security, I think, that Apple does not afford apps of Black Ink's vintage to use, by default anyway. Mm-hmm. So like this app that built and runs and is fine, if you run it on a modern OS, it tries to connect to the New York Times and it uses the wrong version of TLS and it fails. Now, I don't know. I'm going to be curious what happens if you open up a web browser and you start browsing around. Have you already done this?
I've done this. It works.
Yeah.
So, I mean, certain websites do not look great, but it's Safari. It's an older version of Safari. I think Safari 4 sounds about something right. And like I said, we haven't upgraded past 10.5, but I'm sure it will go further than that. It does stop at some point. I did just some quick searches, and like I think you can get it. We can get it much further into the modern world, but not quite all the way into the modern world, just because Apple doesn't support, obviously, you know, super old hardware on the latest versions of the OS. And you can do some hacks, but yeah. Yeah, it'll only get you so far. So websites work. New browsers do not run on it. You know, like you cannot download the latest version of Chrome or Firefox. It will not run on 10.5. So again, need to bring this computer a little more into the future before I can answer these kind of questions. And for now, it's mostly just kind of a fun experiment. I don't think it's actually worth putting SSD drives in it, upgrading the RAM. I don't think it's probably worth that, although it would be a fairly small investment. I mean, probably for $200, it could, this computer would be twice as fast with a couple upgrades. So it wouldn't take much, but probably not worth the investment.
And it's probably kind of impressively fast as it is. Does it feel that way or does it feel
slow? No, it's super slow. It's slow because of the hard drives. Dual core Xeons, I guess. And yeah, in theory, you could upgrade that. You could upgrade the graphics card. You could put more memory in it. It's really upgradable, really, but it's only so far you can take it.
Right.
But the spinning disks is the absolute bottleneck on this computer. You can tell as you use it. I have a bunch of old family videos in my app Clipstart that I did, I guess, a lot of development on this computer because I had the source and the project and stuff on it. I opened that up and was looking through old videos and stuff. And yet the hard drive is definitely the biggest bottleneck. It's not the fastest computer in the world, but I think it would feel twice as fast if you upgraded the RAM and the drives.
It's always so amazing to go back and use one of those computers where you're like, hey, I thought this was really fast. At one point you were coming to this computer from whatever you had before. Maybe it was an iMac. Maybe it was a Mac 2 or a Quadra 840 AV. It
wasn't that long ago.
And you were like, oh my gosh, I have a Mac Pro, the top of the line. I'm finally going to be able to compile my apps really quickly. And now you look back at it and you're like, oh my God, this thing is slow.
Yeah. Yeah. Because it really, I mean, it hasn't gotten slower. So I'm telling you it's slow. It was that slow when I was using it.
Yeah.
Because it's still, it's not like I'm running 10.11 on this thing. It's literally running 10.5 still. So it's the same speed it was when I stopped using it. And it's kind of incredible that I put up with that performance.
I know.
I don't know.
Well, that's a fun pastime. You can join the John Siracusa Mac Pro Club. I think he's probably running a similar vintage.
Yeah, I think I got the impression he's running a little bit later version of this that's been upgraded, but I haven't been following it because, to be honest, I tune out a lot of that stuff because that's not me anymore. I am exclusively using a laptop without a monitor, external display. Right. That's my life now because I like the portability.
Yeah.
So it's to dip my toes in that past of oh yeah, I used to have a Mac Pro and I had a couple monitors connected to it, and it's really interesting. To go back to that.
I think it's interesting too, because I'm like you. I have gone many years ago full portable, and I'm talking to you right now looking at my MacBook Pro propped up on a stack of books and an old art supplies box on my desk. And I'm just used to it. It's perfect for me. It's a 15-inch MacBook Pro. It has a pretty big screen. It works for me. But sometimes I think maybe I would be better served by going back to the bona fide desktop. But it's a pretty good compromise. You really can. Everything about my developer computing life lives on this Mac, and it goes with me on. Speaking of traveling, as we did last week, it goes with me wherever I go, and it's kind of nice that way. But who knows? Maybe one of these upcoming Mac Pros or new iMacs will get me back into the desktop life.
not for me, but I definitely appreciate why people like that. And it's something nice about having a computer that you can upgrade, throughout the years and keep it current. All right. Thanks everyone for listening this week. Good talking to you, Daniel. I'm looking forward to actually installing Mojave one of these days and playing around with dark mode and updating micro.blog for it. I think that'll be fun. And like you said, users will appreciate it on day one when they have Mojave installed and your app isn't the only one that still looks kind of out of place.
Yep, absolutely. It's a fun time. Lots of new stuff from Apple, lots of stuff to explore and enjoy. So we'll keep digging at it. And Manton, I'll talk to you next week.
All right, see ya.